That's what you're saying. There you go. Do y'all need this? Do y'all need this?
Don't fair looking now.
All righty. Hi, I'm Damon, I'm in Hannah. I got a cold today.
Man voice, though.
I'm Damon, and I got a question, let's see. What is the trick to staying clean for decades? Well, you really should not get married more than 6 times. I'd have to say that, you know, for me, it's been, you know, for one, not using. And the other thing is, I gotta keep coming here. A lot of people I will see over the years, they'll fade away. You know, their life gets better and often they quit coming. And some of those people do fine if they go to some other something, church, whatever. But the ones that don't do anything, I think they tend to just fall back into compulsive behaviors and eventually they use again. They forget. There'll be some wedding, drink some champagne. Next you know, they're shooting that dope. So we forget. We're really amazingly dumb at being forgetful. It's really shocking how we can forget that we used to, you know, do that and then you don't, you know. But it's best to remember it, and the best way to remember it is to show up here. And of course, the other thing is, when I'd love to say that I work 10, 11, and 12 all the time and every day, and I take a written inventory just before I go to bed, but I don't really do that. I would theoretically do, and I've done it before and I got good results, but I only did that for about a month or so because it's really, you know, tiring. And you know, you got things that interfere in your life, like, you know, Netflix and Amazon Prime. So, you know, it's best to stay involved even a little bit, you know, just don't quit coming, because I know it gets real boring. I know, you know, I've been coming here since I was in 11th grade, and now I'm old and bald and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I know it gets boring, but the alternative is to just be out there with all these people functioning. And we have this really good 12 steps to function with if we'll apply them to our life. But if we don't, we'll tend to revert back to really obsessive and compulsive behavior, and it'll make us kind of miserable over time. So, you know, glad to be here. Love y'all.
I'm JW and I'm an addict. I had to go through 4 or 5 questions before
I found one. I think it was 7 or 8 of them.
Well, okay, Mr. Math Man. I picked the one that I wanted to fucking answer, okay? Because the rest of them are really stupid fucking questions. How do you pick up the phone instead of picking up dope? When I first got here, actually I got introduced to NA while I was in the penitentiary. Never got to go to treatment, never heard of treatment. So I would write letters to the group and people would write back. And so it started out writing letters, and because I didn't have a phone in prison. And so when I got here, one of the things they suggested was to get phone numbers. And so I would ask the girls, you know, can I have your phone number? And that didn't work out too good. Well, it did and it didn't. But so they suggested to get men's numbers. So I did that. But what I realized was when I was using, I wanted the best, I wanted your connects connect. And so that had the really good shit and at a good price. And so I kind of flipped that same idea to the men in our group. And that's worked really well over the years. So I listen to what they say, then I watch what they do. And if their ass and their mouth don't line up, I don't fucking call them because it's full of shit. But the ones that were really living the program, they were good. And even my first sponsor, he wasn't that good at living it, but he was good at talking it. And so I learned some stuff from him that I applied later. So, that, you know, for me, picking up the dope is always, I'm an addict. Using is on my list of things to do every day. If I keep a good list of numbers and I do service and I attend meetings and I work steps, I'm not going to get down to using because I ain't got enough time in the day. Because I know that's going to consume my every waking moment. But over the years, I've developed these relationships with men that I want to call them. And I get phone calls during the day. And we actually stay connected because they live in other states. And we don't get to see each other very often. So we have to use what's available. And the phone is good. The thing about it is you have to do it long enough that's an alternative to using drugs. You know, it's not if you stop using, it's when. It's not if you make these phone calls, it's when. So that's kind of how I look at it.
I'm Ryan, I'm an addict.
Hey, Ryan.
I want to explain to y'all how this is supposed to work. It's supposed to be spontaneity. So in other words, you ain't supposed to draw your goddamn question out of the bucket before you get up here. So you ain't got no chance to gather your thoughts. Some of us are natural born cheaters, though. Tell us how you really feel.
We're not all as great as Ryan.
This is true. Now, I'm nothing if not politically correct, okay? And I try to be aware of that kind of stuff at all times. And I looked around our agenda up here and noticed we were an estrogen-free panel. And I figured, that's really not right. You know, and I tried to get Chris Dane to come, but I saw she had a sidekick. Yeah, okay, well, I'm...
As you can see, he's not following his own fucking explanation.
Fuck y'all. Hey, this is blank. I guess that means I can do what the hell ever I want.
Make up a question.
Huh?
Make up a fucking question.
All right, you notice this is a panel free of black folks, too. And I got to thinking about that. That's just not really politically correct. But I was sitting around on Black Friday a few years ago. It'll become apparent here in a minute. And I sent off, they had a DNA test for $50. Cheapest I ever saw it. So I sent off and got me a DNA test. And I forgot about it, and it comes back in the mail one day. Not in the mail, in email, you know. And 60% UK, 20% Northern European, and 20% Scandinavian, which was kind of a surprise. But 60, 20, 20 adds up to 100, right? Not so fast, my friends. Turns out there's 0.8% Nigerian. So I have a Nigerian in my woodpile, and I am an African American, and I'm here to say that I'm filling that quotient up here on the panel today. God love you. I was answering why there wasn't no black people up here.
My name's Linda. I'm an addict.
Hey, Linda.
I did not know I was going to be on the Ask It Basket today, but what really happened was Ryan got up here and looked around and seen there's a bunch of pussies sitting up here and won't know if a real bitch would stand up. Or something like that. Okay, it says, what are the top three things I can do to stay clean? Make meetings, make meetings, make meetings. Make meetings and get a sponsor. Make meetings and learn how to do the steps. And make meetings and don't use no fucking dope. That's how you do it. And make a meeting when you don't want to make a meeting. and make a meeting when you're scared to go in a meeting. And if you're scared to go in a meeting, just bust up in that sumbitch and say, "Here I am." Somebody's going to be your sponsor before you leave.
I like that one.
Big Paul, lady.
Big Paul.
How do you keep your significant other from micromanaging your recovery? Oh, boy. Very easy. I got a male sponsor, number one. I don't got a female sponsor. That's what it took for me. Plus, on top of that, my significant other don't know my shit. But we can sit in a meeting and we can share on each other and we can share on ourselves. Believe it or not, I'm married for 27 years to a recovering addict. And my wife today will tell you one thing. She lets me live my recovery and I let her live her recovery. That's what I'm about. I don't worry about my significant other because I'm not worried about her. I'm trying to worry about my ass today. You know, I don't know about y'all, but for me, it's one of these live or die motherfucker. You know? I'm here to slay my ass, not my face. I started to say it the other way around. So really and truly, I shouldn't be worrying about everybody else. I should be worrying about me. Because you see, I'm still an addict still today. Even after whatever amount of time I've got. If I got a day, I'm an addict. I'm going to want to use. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul.
I'm Mike. I'm an addict.
Hey, Mike.
How do you help or respond to an addict who is going through something you have no experience with? Well, my first 2 or 3 years here, I thought I had to have an answer. And then I realized it's okay not to know. And I don't have to have an answer. And I don't need to be telling anybody, you know, what to do. If somebody asks you, should they get a divorce, you need to avoid that question. You know, you can listen to them and they may need to decide that themselves, but you don't need to tell them yay or nay, I don't think. And the biggest thing is listening. And I had a counselor one time and he told me, when people ask you questions like that, he said, listen to them and then look around the room, act like you're thinking. He said, for about 30 seconds or a minute, and then look right back at them and say, what do you think? And he said, 9 times out of 10, they'll tell you what they're thinking about doing. And he said, then you can respond to that, you know, if it's something good, you know, support them in it. And if they're thinking about using, you know, you can say, well, that's not a good idea. But it was a relief for me when I learned that I didn't have to have an answer for everything. And there's somebody around here that's been through the same thing. And if you... if you get on the hunt, you'll find them or just listen. But that's what I'd do.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
I'm an addict named Sean.
Hey, Sean.
I have no idea what the hell they asked me to get up here for. What is your favorite tradition and why? Well, I don't really have a favorite. but I like the 12th tradition a whole lot. First off, I'd like to say that clean time does not equal recovery. Just saying. These are all my predecessors, you know, and I was sitting there thinking, why in the hell did they get me up here? Because I'm looking at 30 plus, and 25 plus, and 30 plus, and 25 plus, and 30 plus, and 40 plus, and I mean, that's a lot of damn clean time up here.
We're
20
plus.
Yeah,
20
plus.
I like the 12th tradition because, and I love when I'm asked to share on it in my home group or any other group. And y'all forgive me, I get emotional about this stuff because y'all saved my life. I hear so many times people talk about anonymity just being the bearer of no names, and to me it's so much more, and I learned that through y'all. I learned that anonymity is actually a spiritual principle, which I knew nothing about when I got here. I learned that, and one way I like to explain it, that it helps me understand it, is that it doesn't matter if this young lady just came out of during neurosurgery at the biggest hospital in the country, and this young man just got through changing oil in my truck. When they walk through that door back there into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, they're on the same playing field. They're both just addicts that came into this room trying to find a new way of life. And I hear about the anonymity meaning that I ain't supposed to tell anybody your last name. Well, hell. You know, I hear Ryan share this sometimes, and I used to get tickled because I thought the same thing when I first got here. Well, so-and-so at the meeting last night? Well, I can't tell you that. Should have been at the damn meeting, right? And then I realized through listening to my predecessors that, hell, if Damon was in the hospital sick and I wanted to go see him, and I go to the desk and say, look, I need to see Damon S. Who the hell is Damon S? Well, he's a friend of mine. You know, I've known him for 20-something years. Oh, we don't have a Damon S. We got, you know. So I learned that that's okay, that there is no anonymity amongst ourselves, okay? And if I knew Stacy was at the meeting last night and Mason wasn't, and he asked me tomorrow, well, was she at the meeting last night? Well, yeah, she was at the meeting because he knows that she's in recovery. And she knows he's in recovery. Now, where that breaks her anonymity is if I go to telling him what she shared in that meeting. Okay? Then I'm breaking her anonymity. Then's where he should have had his ass in that meeting. Okay? The sum total of what I don't know about the traditions today is totally staggering. I'll tell you that. I learn on a daily basis. Now, the principles before personalities part of that is a tough one for me. Okay? Because I am by no means well in this fellowship. I keep coming back hoping to get better on a daily basis. I will still take your inventory before I realize it. And that's just being real. I don't mean to, but I will pigeonhole you and put you in a box and think, well, hell, they're never going to make it, or they ain't doing this right, or whatever the case may be. And see, what I've learned through doing that is that's my personality standing in the way. Because, see, I can block out that individual that just might be carrying the message that could save my life. And that's what little I know about the 12th tradition.
Let's see. How do you feel about CH something during the readings? Oh, chanting. Chanting, I figured it out.
Good question.
Okay. Well, I came from a kind of a school where we really didn't do that. And that much, you know.
Why don't you speak into the microphone? I can't hear you.
Oh, okay.
Well,
oh, yeah, I'll read it again. how do you feel about chanting during the meetings, during the readings? Well, for me, it's pretty simple. I think that it's a bad idea because when people come into our fellowship, into a meeting, and they're new and they're nervous and they've never been here before, they need to hear this reading and focus on what is said, if they have even the inkling of the willingness to do so. And it needs to get in there, so it's important. So the chanting, though, it breaks up the monotony if you've heard this stuff read a million times. And I have. I mean, I've been going for a long time. And it's really boring. But I don't chant because I don't want people to be distracted. And, you know, I make sure my TikTok is on silent and everything. Because, I mean, I have heard it before. I could probably memorize it, but I can't remember stuff very good anymore. That's why I have a really young wife. It's nice.
I am drawing my question now.
My boy.
And fuck you very much. What have you learned about surrender? Everything I've learned about surrender, I've learned from Brian. When I first got here, the surrender to win, I'm straight up out of the penitentiary. That didn't make a lick of sense to me. When you surrender, you lay down your arms and they lead you away in chains. And that was my definition of it to begin with. Over the years, over some time of keep coming back, listening to the reading. Hell, the first time I heard How It Works was read in a penitentiary. It was 105 convicts in that room. And when they said 105 people hollered, "Wee!" That was my first higher power. Because I'm thinking, all these motherfuckers are screaming, "Wee!" On the yard, it's us against them. Because they was trafficking, trading, bunch of gang shit. When I got to my first NA Free World meeting, they said one, I went, "Wee!" I was the only one in the room. So I had to surrender that idea real quick, because they don't do that here. We used to chant through the whole fucking thing back in them days. And then we got better educated, I guess, or a different idea. You know, how many of y'all were in the history workshop this morning? So I love that clip from Inception or whatever that movie was. The thing that takes hold is an idea. And I got all choked up during that history conference, that presentation. And I've been through a bunch of those, and it always makes me think about how easy we have it today. We didn't have to worry about the cops busting us standing out in front of this hotel today. I'm a 3-time convicted felon. I can hang out with this, 27 convicted felon over here. You know, and as far as why we're asked to do this, they could have asked any one of y'all to get up here and answer these questions. You know, we all have an answer to what surrender to me. Today it means I just don't have to fight anymore. And I don't have to worry about a whole lot of shit that I had. You know, how do I keep my wife from micromanaging my shit? I divorce her ass. More than once. So we all got different answers, you know. It's our answer, man. There's no right or wrong answer in this thing. We may change our idea later on based on our experience. I come in here with a lot of really crazy ideas because I had a penitentiary mind. The definitions did not apply to my life at that time. It did, but I didn't understand it. You know, and the people that were in my life back in those days, they were just as messed up as I was. Some of them relapsed, some of them died, and some of us stayed. And so we have a totally different experience as we go along, you know. And what I believe today, hell, you may say something tonight out there by the smoking thing that will totally change my whole universe. And so surrender for me today, it just means I don't have to fight me anymore. I may have to cut your fucking throat today, but I ain't got to fight me no more. Thanks for letting me share.
Was that spontaneous enough?
That was much better. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Ryan. I'm an addict. Elaborate on the importance of the first tradition. That's unity, ain't it?
It is.
Yeah, okay.
We're on the second tradition.
We are. We've done Bapa. We've passed the first tradition. Some of the guys in my sponsorship family and I, we meet at my house every 2 weeks. And we went through the Greg Pierce's Back to the Basic. We've started on the Guiding Principles book, which is on the 12 traditions. And I think it was 2020, but it might have been 2019 when we started on tradition one, and we still ain't nowhere near done with tradition two. Okay, so we figure that probably a significant percentage of us will be dead before we finish this book, and that's okay. It ain't a race. I don't believe that this will work without unity. The spiritual principle of unity. And I believe the source of unity comes from singleness of purpose. That's, you know, we ain't got but one primary purpose as a group. But our primary purpose as a group ain't my primary purpose. You know, my primary purpose is to stay clean a day at a time and learn to follow some damn directions. You know, our purpose as a group is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And they're two kind of different things. And let me say this about unity. I have a real hard time differentiating between unity and anonymity because they are so closely related to one another, even though one of them's in tradition one and the other one's in tradition 11 and 12, which the practical application of anonymity in 11 and 12 are really kind of different. And I think the shit that you hear in meetings when they ask about the 12 tradition is really about tradition 11 and not about tradition 12. But that's just me, you know. But they're so tightly intertwined with one another that they kind of make the traditions themselves a big spiritual circle. And I don't know if that means anything to anybody else, but it kind of means something to me, you know. God, I'm grateful to be here this weekend. I got choked up too. Cried like a baby. They did that thing at the World Convention, that thing at the end, you know. I think didn't they do that on the Saturday night meeting when sitting in a room with 30,000 people watching that video was pretty powerful shit. I'm here to tell you. That's all I got.
Still Linda.
Hey, still Linda.
Hey, Linda.
It says, how do I learn to live with my lust? Well, lust. If you talking about sexual lust, well, here's Sally and here's James. You know, if you are talking about just lust of the heart of I want your car and I want your job and I want your whatever, working the steps. The steps have helped me with every I know y'all don't think I came in here with any character defects. But I did, I promise. And I didn't just give them all up when I came in the door. You know, some of them, I can remember when, oh, probably the fourth step through the seventh step, you know, dealing with character defects. And my sponsor tell me something, which, you know, she must not have known me at all because it had nothing to do with me. But she ended with one thing. Just pray about it, honey. And so I'd pray about it, and guess what? But it usually wasn't until I was caught dead up in the middle of it that I would be like, oh. So to me, working the steps is the answers to all my problems. You know, if I'm jealous, I find the answer for it in that basic text. If I'm lustful of anything, your husband, your car, your job, if I'm working the steps, my problem will be solved. Because I'm going to tell you something else my sponsor told me. When you get serious and down to business about working on your sick ass, you won't have time to be thinking about nothing else.
Let's see what I got. Big Paul Attic again.
Hey, Big Paul.
Oh, boy. Do you still have any issues with codependency? And how have you navigated your way through that? I don't even know if I got any codependencies. I got one. My higher power. I got a codependency with it. Because you see, it helps me to stay clean on a daily basis. But I don't even know the definition of codependency. So, you know, that's just that. But anyway, that's when you depend on somebody else, right?
Get obsessed with them. Or
obsessed with somebody? Oh, okay. Thank you, Ryan.
Yes,
sir. That's right. See, I got a 12th grade education, but I didn't use it. But anyway, you know, I don't obsess about people. Because to me, what they got, I don't want. But see, in the same breath, I might want what Ricky's got. Might want what Coco's got. But what do they have? See, that goes back to judging. Because I'm not here to judge y'all on what you got in recovery. I'm here to stay clean and carry a clear NA message. Whose wrist is that? Navigate your way through that. I don't understand that question. I'm sorry, I don't understand that question. But that's the way I got through it anyway.
I'm Mike, I'm at it.
Hi, Mike.
How do I stop gossiping so much? I tell you what, when I first got clean, there wasn't much I liked about myself, and I thought everything was wrong. And but there were a lot of areas that were probably severe that really bothered me, and I'd lay down at night and I'd see them go across, and when I woke up in the morning, and when they started, something was bothering me to the point it was on my mind when I went to bed and when I got up. Most of that stuff, it was unacceptable to me, and I wanted to just tell God about it, and you know, wanted it to go away. And one thing I learned, anything I didn't like about myself, I had to tell God and I had to tell another human being. And I'd pray about it, but once I let another human being in on it, and a lot of this stuff I couldn't even talk to anybody about, but if I heard one of y'all talking in a meeting about it, I'd follow you to the parking lot and I'd talk to you because I knew I could talk to you. And what I found out when I shared with another human being and shared with God about anything, any character defect I had, and I asked him to remove it, that door opened, but until I included another human being, nothing happened. But the amazing thing is you'll be thinking nothing's happening, I'm not changing. Your spouse will be telling you you ain't changing if you got one. And a few months down the road, you'll look back and that character defect is, for me, it would be gone. And it'd been gone a while before I noticed it was gone. But if I think if you're honest about it and you talk to somebody and you talk to God about it and you're willing to let it go, it'll go. That's been my experience.
Thank you. Love you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Addict named Sean. How did you deal with rebuilding relationships with your children when you got into recovery? That's a good question. It was tough. And 20 plus years later, I'm still working on it. I just buried my oldest daughter in November from this disease. My youngest daughter, she was always my ride or die. I don't know, it didn't matter what daddy did, or, you know, she came to prison to visit me when I was in prison. She came to rehabs to visit me. She, you know, daddy could do no wrong. And my middle daughter, that relationship has been estranged for years. But what I had to do for me was, because, you know, they get tired of that same old song and dance. You know, it was Vince Gill, just give me one more last chance. Because they had heard that so many times throughout their childhood. You know, daddy would get it right. And they had seen me go in and out of treatment. And, you know, I had my two daughters by my second marriage sitting in meetings with me when they were 6 and 7 years old. And so, you know, they had seen me bounce in and out and never do anything different. So the best thing that I could do this time around was to show them. Yeah. You know, there's an old saying around the rooms that I can't hear a damn word you're saying because what you're doing speaks so loud.
Yeah, I know I'm sick. I got cold or the COVID or whatever it is. One of them things, I don't know. You know how much evil you have by giving it away. What was acceptance like for you in the beginning and how has it changed over time? Well, for me, it's a lot. In the beginning, I didn't have a lot of acceptance, you know. I came to this program and I had turmoil in my mind, I had turmoil in my life. I tried to control people, places, things, situations. I would constantly plan about what I was going to do in the future and how it was going to turn out. I would regret my past, and I would focus on it a lot. And, you know, over time, I discovered in this program, I'm real, real dumb about this program, and that we'd have that reading thing, that just for today, and it took about 4 or 5 years, but I realized one day that that was instructions of how I should exist in this world. And for me, it is all about, it's hugely about acceptance. It's a big part of my life. I have no, now I see the world very simply. I have no ability to change anything in my past. So it's a waste of time to dwell over it. I regret not buying Google when it opened, to be honest, you know, years ago, but that's a whole nother thing. And in the future, I can make plans for my life. Okay, that's fine. I can make vague plans. I don't make specific plans because I've learned from this program that I am not in control of how anything comes out in life. I show up. I might have a vague plan. I can do something toward that plan only today. It, you know, if I want to go to college, you know, I might, if now I'm in high school, I might should study for the test tomorrow. You know, that's what I can do today. You know, if I want my relationship better, I should do something kind today. You know, it's not theoretical in the future. I have no control over how any of it turns out. I'm often told that I'm, you know, like really good at acceptance, extremely unusually good, and I am because I view myself in this world. I used to view myself that I had control over how events turn out, and I realize I do not, that actually I'm merely a leaf floating on the wind, and sometimes I might land in a fire, sometimes I might land in a cool stream, and I have no real say over where I land. Maybe I can twist this way or that way, but ultimately I'm gonna land where I land, and my duty in this life is to learn from each of those situations that roll through my life. I don't have to control them. I only need to learn from them, and my life will be vastly improved. And I've gotten this from this program. I have a very good life, and I appreciate it. My peers from long ago in high school that I hung out with, most of them are dead, and the ones, the few that are not dead, most of them did not make their 50s. And, you know, I'm obviously in my 50s. I know I only look about 42, but really, you know, it's only because I quit smoking early in recovery instead of getting ready for a long time. Look.
Thanks, Diamond.
What if I don't love my partner anymore? Well, I was kind of confused about what love really is. You know, when I first got here, like I said, I got 13 step and was very willing to. She said, I'm horny. And I said, me too. And that continued on for about a decade. And I married a couple of them. And I really thought I knew. What I realized was I was in love with this idea of what we could have if they would just straighten the fuck up and do what I needed them to do. And then when I realized that, I got to looking back at how all of it started. You know, we hooked up physically, and then we tried to like each other. And fuck, I just didn't like them. And I liked that, but I didn't like them. And because they were so unhealthy. And then my sponsor fucked it all up. And he goes, well, what is your part in that, JW? I didn't have an answer. And so my expectations were unrealistic. And so that started the process of, and then I went and was introduced one night at a treatment center to speak, and this guy gave the definition of love that he had been given. And it, love is taking infinite delight in someone else's well-being. And I was sitting by this woman that I had married, my fourth wife, that when we met, we didn't hook up. My idea was, let's just try to be friends. And because I was looking back at my part, that my sponsor screwed everything up and said, what is your part? And I thought my part was being willing to participate in the unhealthy behavior. Anyway, I didn't kiss her till the preacher said, you can kiss the bride. And we were friends. And I can't tell you how that has made such a tremendous difference. So I would say, if you don't take infinite delight in your partner's well-being, to end that relationship. I was told that early on by my first sponsor's wife. She said, "Can," because I was going with this girl that drank whiskey every night, and she said, "Well, can you accept her just the way she is for the rest of your life?" And I said, "Hell no." She said, "Well, you need to end that relationship." And I said, "Well, why would I want to do that? I mean, I think she maybe, probably, she just might straighten up." Anyway, I did end that relationship, and it felt like I left my leg somewhere. It was that profound of how codependent and unhealthy that relationship was. But it was the beginning of change for me. Now, did I get healthy? No, I got jumped right into another relationship, and we fucked that up, and we got a divorce, and then a couple weeks later, I got in another relationship that was really fucked up, and my third wife, and that ended, you know. And so I'd finally gotten beaten down enough by my own behavior that I surrendered the idea of hooking up and then trying to like them, you know. So, but if, and I ain't telling you to end the relationship, but that's what I was told to do. If I can't take infinite delight in my partner's well-being, then they might need to be with somebody else that can, you know. And if they can't do that for themselves, you know, I would ask you, what is your fucking part in that? Because that really started something different for me. And that's all I got.
I'm crying, I'm an addict. Why is it so hard to come back after a relapse? I have no experience with this. So I went to somebody that does. I don't know. How about that?
My name's Linda. I'm an addict.
Hey, Linda.
I have quite a bit of experience with that. You know, I don't know so much about a relapse because up until I fully took the first step into my heart, I didn't have anything to relapse from. But I did have a little bit of the program under my belt and would go back out, and I would be ashamed to come back in. I can't tell you how many times that I sat in the meeting messed up as Moody's goose. And the people around me would tell me to just keep coming back. You know, there were times they would have to hold me up at the end of the meeting just so I didn't fall flat on my face while we said the closing prayer. So no matter how embarrassing it is, how hard it is to come back, from my own experience, I would just beg, please go back to a meeting. Go back in there and let somebody love you and help you and show you until it becomes your turn to help the next one that's embarrassed to come back in the meeting.
Thanks, Linda.
I'm Mike, I'm at it.
Hey, Mike.
I was thinking about that question, you know, about how do you stop gossiping, and after I sat down, and I can remember wanting to quit lying. And I'd lie to you sometime, and it didn't matter. You know, I could have told you the truth, but I'd lie. And I prayed about that. And I was talking to somebody one day, and I was in the middle of whatever I was telling them, and that clicked in my head. And I just stopped right in the middle of it, and I looked at them, and I said, that's not the way that happened at all. I'm lying to you, and this is the truth. Well, it embarrassed me, and, you know, they backed up, and I had to do that twice, and I quit lying. For what it's worth.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, thank you guys.